Good evening, everyone, again. It's January 13th, 2022. I was wondering this morning what would be appropriate for tonight as a topic. I was wondering if there was anything that was coming up for me that could be interesting to share together. And over the course of the day, I think there was one topic that came back. Last week, I talked about the importance of intention and building our intention. Recognizing why we sit, or the difficulty we might have about sitting in our practice. And today I thought I would like to share with you over the past month, or maybe I don't know how many years, how I've been more and more aware of the simple fact that we don't talk very much about what we do actually when we sit. We don't really talk among each other. What do? Whether when we sit on retreats or we sit on our cushion I mean, I've given numbers of instructions, and I say, well, just the basic instruction, follow your breath. But this is what we start with. But then I have no idea what people are actually doing. So there's that. There's also the fact that we don't talk much about what we actually do when we sit. Also the fact that, so I'm going every week to this school where I'm teaching mindfulness, and I'm trying to present things kind of afresh every week, or how could I say, different aspects of meditation. So I'm really drawing from my experience, and I'm offering different types of meditations, guided meditation, which is not what we do, but also the breath, questions, all kinds of things. So I'm actually expanding a lot these days about the various techniques and practices that are being used within the meditative practices, and also expanding this, also trying to formalize it and better understand when we say what the word practice means and how we actually practically speaking engage that, how we engage our practices during the course of our day. In 2 weeks' time, I've been invited to speak at the school in something that they call the Health Week, so they're going to cover all kinds of aspects of health, and they asked me to intervene and talk about mindfulness. And one of the aspects that I would like to talk about is mindfulness at work, for example. What can we do when we are at work? Because we cannot just sit on our cushion. So I find it's a very broad topic. And as I've probably said many times, you know, we always say, oh, everything is practice, which is true. But again, how I've becoming more and more aware of the various very like practical settings that I put for myself and that we can put for ourselves to engage in this life of awakening. And one thing that comes to mind for me is goes back to what I find is a very crucial central aspect of this, the Buddhist teaching, which that we could that can be that goes back to that notion of conditionality, conditions. Becoming more attuned, more aware with what are our conditions. As we were sitting just now and I was seeing what was coming up, I what came up is that I realized all these texts that we that the sutras and all that, and the discourses that that constitutes the Pali Canon. They never really talk about, I mean, sometimes they do talk about meditation, but most of it, they talk about social interactions between people, problems, fights between the whole part of the what constitutes also the one of the scriptures that contains the Vinaya, the discipline, what's called the discipline, the Vinaya. It's an account basically of monastic lives and probably the problems they had with all kinds of health issues or problems between people and all that. And how do we solve that? And what kind of regulations, what kind of discipline can we put for ourselves in order to solve these problems, to live together harmoniously. That's basically what the Vinaya is, the this corpus of text of the about the discipline of the monks. So, looking at our conditions, looking at where we are, what's the situation we're in, where are we at? All right, am I at right now? Am I angry? Am I totally exhausted? Am I in doubt with my whole practice? Am I grieving? Am I having difficulties with someone that kind of and that preoccupies me? Where are we at? And I find that if we start from there, combined with our intention for a wholesome life, what are the practices that might be appropriate under these circumstances? What should I do when I sit? Or if I cannot sit, what should I do? What could I do? If I don't have time to sit because I have to go somewhere and I need to take the bus, Well, that's my condition, that's my situation. Combined with the fact that I want to lead a wholesome life, what can I do? And I enter in the subway, I enter in the Debbie knows that by heart, and then it's crowded, it's annoying, people smell, people scream, I don't know, all kinds of things happen. These are the conditions. I can be sucked into it, being angry, whatever, or I can look at these conditions, I can combine with my desire to have to lead a wholesome life, to find peace, to awaken, to dwell in non-reactivity. These are my conditions for my practice. So what can I do there within that context? And so we need to be creative in our practice because all of us, we have different conditions. We live under different circumstances, different countries, different situations in terms of age, capacities, health capacities, strength, etc., etc. So I really discovered, as I think as I'm teaching and as I'm reading and as I have to, yes, as I have to respond to different situations, when I talk to people to share this practice, I really realized how vast our tools are. A toolbox is. So sometimes when I'm very preoccupied by something, and I sit and I know that I'm very preoccupied by, I don't know, like an interaction that a difficult situation, interaction that I had with someone. I'm going to sit with that, see what comes up, what's the source of it. And sit with it as a koan. Hopefully, luckily, I'm not always carried away by these problematics, and sometimes I feel rather peaceful. And I find it's a total bliss there when I'm not preoccupied by anything in particular to be able to try to tap into a very deep inner silence, inner peace. Sometimes it's not possible. When my mother passed away, I was so much in the states of grievance that I just stopped working on koans because that wasn't appropriate, like to move on with the koans that I was studying at the time. There were koans actually that helped me to go through. The koan, how do you build the teacher, like this old teacher that how does it go? The monk asks his very old teacher, what do you want me to do? And the teacher answers, build me a seamless tomb. That was a beautiful koan that really was very helpful at that moment. So to sit with that, combined with my grief, that was very helpful. Metta, loving kindness practices where we wish ourselves well, good, and others well and good. I started doing that also, and sometimes it's for example, when I'm encountering difficulties with someone. Can I wish that person well? That's very useful. And sometimes it's very hard to have love for oneself, and because of a specific circumstance, and it's actually can be really helpful to sit with that and repeat these lines. I wish myself well. And as we are lay people, we do not have the leisure to sit all day long. And so our work environment, for those of us who work, that's a field of practice. Buddha field. And again, what can we do to help us remembering that it's our field of practice, that our work can be the place where the practice actually occurs. I notice for myself it's going to be very different. For example, if I have something to do for work, I'm at home and I lit up a stick of incense, and I'm thinking, this is Samu time now. That's for my livelihood. I need to make money. Okay, I'm just going to do that. Sometimes I do feel that wearing a mala, it's like carrying a little temple. And it's a nice way to remember. You don't wear a rakusu, but you have like a little bracelet that reminds you that when you look at it, all right, yes, I am practicing this awakening path right now. A meeting in a work environment could seem like the situation where really practice is not happening. Well, it's really about if we bring that into the framework of appropriate speech, that suddenly it makes sense. That's appropriate speech, all right? Listening from the heart, speaking from the heart. One of the core aspects of the Eightfold Path. Leisure. Whatever we're doing, like a creative task. Freddie and Thomas and I shared today we had a Zoom about our guitar practice. And really kind of approaching whatever artistic discipline that we're doing with that space of, I don't know where I'm going with that. Opening up to the unknown, it's very different than approaching it with, I don't know, a mind of performance, achievement, just I want to learn new skills. Yeah, but to do what? So again, that's a field of practice, a possible field of practice. And personally, I do feel that I do feel that it's very useful to establish before we're starting, or as we are starting, to establish our intention and the kind of the direction that we're taking with whatever we're doing. When I'm starting to sit, just okay, am I gonna, if I understand the circumstances I'm in, what am I gonna practice there? Let's establish beforehand that I'm gonna establish that I'm gonna practice, I don't know, loving kindness, or I'm gonna follow my breath, or I'm gonna work on my koan. Instead of just start with this and do a little bit of that, and then come back to the koan, and then think about that person, and then do a little bit of metta with that, and then go back to whatever. So, keeping the mind focused, but choosing a practice, really choosing a practice, depending on the conditions we are in. And this process I find requires a lot of creativity. What works for you? Bernie Glassman would set up his had this practice of setting up his alarm at midday, and if he were in a meeting and the his watch was ringing, he would just stop for a minute. That's what was helpful for him to just come back. If you work in a library, for example, it's probably very inappropriate to have your alarm ring, your phone ring, in a silent environment. So I keep trying to find new ways and new ways to integrate that. To integrate our practice with a big P into various practices with a small P. Driving a car also. Am I going to drive the car while at the same time thinking about what I'm going to do and do my phone, do my work, do all kinds of things, listen to a podcast, whatever, or am I just going to concentrate on the road? Or I could be concentrate on the road and at the same time listening to a podcast. But I realized a couple of weeks ago I went for a walk and I tried to listen to a podcast while just having a walk outside, and I realized I just couldn't really do both fully. Either I wasn't paying attention to my surroundings, or I wasn't pay or if I was paying attention to my surroundings, I had problems really remembering what was being said. So I just stopped listening to the Dharma talk, and I thought I was listening, a podcast was a Dharma talk, and I thought, okay, I'm just gonna pay attention to my environment. Pay attention to whatever I'm encountering, and I discovered tons of things. I noticed tons of things in my neighborhood that I had never noticed before because I was fully paying attention, and I thought that is going to be my practice. So, and it's so important to be creative with that precisely because this practice is taking root in a new land under new circumstances, and even and especially now, I mean, just with a pandemic, okay, we can't meet in person. Really, it's becoming more and more difficult. It has been more and more difficult. So how do we do it? And I think, as I said last week, you know, I got sick of sitting at my desk, and it felt like I was losing something. Just didn't feel I wanted to change, so I rearranged my room. I rearranged the things, so I created new conditions for myself that would support my practice better. And I really think it's infinite, the number of ways we can apply that kind of awakening mind, awakening spirit, this our deep desire to free ourselves from conditioning. It's infinite how we can find ways to help us to support that path. And really just the sitting practice is really the top of the iceberg. I do not really know any other practices that really helps you so in such a way to tap into a deep sense of silence. I really appreciate that. And yet, there are other ways also to cultivate all the other qualities that that supports that path of awakening. Just before that, I had a meeting with the study group with the Body College, like a program that I'm doing with the Body College, and one person. And last week I told you about the five powers that sustains sustains the doing of the second task of dwelling in non letting reactivity be sorry letting reactivity be see the ceasing of reactivity. And someone talked about the five powers as a hand. There was prajna, wisdom, there was concentration, there were like several aspects, and she said it's like a hand. I had the image of a hand, so a hand with five fingers with the five powers. You can use that each finger individually, but the hand is much more powerful when you can actually use all the five fingers. And sometimes two are useful, sometimes three are useful, sometimes the whole hand is useful. It really depends, again, on the situation. That's our tool, right? Our ability to concentrate, our ability to manifest a sense of wisdom, all these are qualities that are going to be useful in the way we function in this world. So I really encourage you to find your own practices, to invent practices, to reflect on all the things that you do and see if what you're doing, you can transform that so that it becomes an enlightening practice, an awakening practice, whatever that is. Sewing, playing guitar, going on your bicycle, working with whatever you're doing, having a meeting with people. How can that be transformed into an awakening practice, a practice that helps you to flourish as a human being, instead of thinking, oh my God, I have to do this thing. This is so annoying. I have to do laundry. I have to clean. All right, I really don't like that. And all right, and then I can do the, I'll do that, and then I'll do the real stuff. I'll do the stuff that really matters, which is sitting, or whatever pleases you, or whatever you that you feel that's the real awakening practice, right? How can that be actually transformed totally? And I guess our aversions towards certain activities are a good indications about where we should look at, actually. I love the image that has always stayed with me, the image that Bernie Glassman gives about the yucky pile. Like when the kids don't like certain things, they put stuff on the corner of their plate, and that's the yucky pile. And the yucky pile is a great indication of what am I trying to discard here, to put away, not see, put under the carpet, thinking, oh, this is not good. All right, can I transform that? Can I transform that attitude and integrate? Because if I trust, if I have that intuition that life is one, and that everything is important, and that everything is practice, there can't be such a thing as a yucky pile. And of course, we have preferences, obviously. I much more prefer to play music than file up my income taxes. It's much more gratifying. It's much more fun. It brings way more joy. So, yeah, just be creative with that. Be creative with the way you practice and integrate everything you can in there, in this basket of awakening. Don't put anything aside. So I'll stop here, and I open it up to comments and sharings and questions and whatever, as usual. Does it make any sense to you? Yeah, Tiago?
Hello everyone. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. At least to me. Thank you for your talk. It was very inspiring. When you talked about mindfulness at work, it is something I've been trying and exploring in past few months. And I had the problem with me is like reminding myself to pay attention, to not get caught up in reactions or being angry or frustrated with a client or whatever. And I tried wearing something around my neck or a mala on my wrist or putting pictures on the wall, like catchphrases or anything. And at some point, I just put an altar next to me, just a surface with a little statue on top. And yeah, for me it works because I cannot have a candle or light incense in my workshop, but it's always there, and for me it's a good reminder just to pay attention and not react so much. And it's also a surface that I used to just pile things on top of. And so every time I do the automatic movement of putting something on top, and I was like, nope, relax. So it's for me it works well. It's a good reminder. Yeah,
Yeah,
and
thank you.
what you said about just being creative with like in a meeting or to practice listening and talking, and yeah, it's a very good idea, and I'm gonna start using it. Thank you.
Thank you. And what comes up also is I find it so important to realize that it's a really a work in progress. You know, if you feel that, oh my God, I don't manage to actually do it. I'm really bad at it. You know, oh, I did it and then I lost it. So it's just my practice is actually shit, you know. Well, it's a work in progress with as the discussion we had last Saturday about the that Lisa brought up about the term enlightened or enlightening or awakened or awakening. It's like we are walking on it and it's like we've arrived anywhere and maybe at some point we've arrived and then we lost it and then it's fine and then we just start we have to start all over or not maybe not all over again but all over again from the point of view that it's just a different moment and just like okay well you know what worked maybe Tiago for you at some point maybe at you know you realize it wasn't super efficient or it worked but then suddenly it might have lost its power so we need to create something else or yeah and so paying attention to the fact that we're gonna stumble and we just get up and pick it up and start again. Yeah. And that's remembering. That's really the remembering aspects, you know, that is implied by the this sati quality, this mindfulness quality. Remembering that. Come back to that. It's not just the attention to something, but all right. I have the mala. I remember why I'm doing that, right? Yeah, Debbie.
Well, what you've been saying, it brought up the whole series of things. First of all, the business about talking about what we do, because I remember this is something that Frank Roshi does with me very regularly. I don't know if he does, I think, I would imagine with everybody. To let's get specific here. And I didn't know. I read a whole bunch of books, so I had like 10 things happening in a half an hour. And to have somebody guide me and say, well, maybe you don't need 10 things in a half an hour, slow down and do one thing at a time. But I'd already been practicing for a couple of years. So somebody should have probably got to me before then and said, let's just stay with one thing at a time. That was the talking about talking to each other. And he does it in Dharma talks too. Either taking a koan, unpacking a koan with everybody together, or discussing specific practices. It really helps, I find in any case, rather than this sort of secretive, I wonder what they're doing, and they're probably doing better than me. There's that. Also, I wanted to thank you and everybody else for the fact that, and I thought about it tonight too, when I was coming back to the Gare du Nord, that the Gare du Nord is not the same place for me anymore. Because after all these, first of all, you explaining to me that it was Dharma, and all these years of not, of saying, don't get mad, they didn't run into you because they hate you, they ran into you because you're a lot of people. It was really, I mean, first of all, there were very few people, I don't know why, maybe just the hour of the day, and it was so such a pleasure to think, to have, to see my progress. Because being mad at the Gare du Nord does not make the Gare du Nord more pleasant, I can tell you that. And not being mad at the Gare du Nord is a trip. I mean, it's just, you know, I could have sat down and had an ice cream right on the spot. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for this testimony of how transformative can this practice be for us, for all of us. Yeah. I'm actually, as this pandemic goes on and on and on, it seems that it's never going to end, and we see less and less and less people. It really reminds me of the makes me aware of and remember of the when I got out from the first lockdown. After these, what, 2 months of lockdown in France, and we had all these meetings on Zoom, and I hadn't seen anybody, and interact physically with anybody, and then as we were released, then it started to be unbearable to be with others, and I'm scared of the things that we're building in without even noticing, because we are by ourselves most of the time, and we forget how annoying people are, the others are. So I know that then the work is going to continue as we go back to our normal life, if we ever do. So it's like really ongoing. And I think we've all also had the experience how sometimes it really feels that our practice is blissful, and then how quickly also it fades away, this sense of bliss also. And I find personally that it can go surprisingly fast. You're on a retreat, it seems wonderful, then you come back and then again something hits you and you have an interaction with your parents or whatever that is, and well, your family member, and it all goes back to your face, comes back to your face. Yeah, Lisa.
Hello. Well, first I was thinking that it'd be nice to actually practice metta once in a while together, like decide to actually do metta during the sitting practice. I was just thinking that I've done it before, but it was in retreats when I started at the very beginning. It was a more Theravada practice, and it was Vipassana, and sometimes we did the metta, guided metta, and it's very powerful, but it's hard. I find it hard to do it on my own. And as Actually, something that I've noticed with my practice is that after all these years, it doesn't necessarily get better in terms of the focus. And lately, as I've talked about it before, but it's particularly present today. Sometimes it's less, but I have this tinnitus, the acouphen, which are here to stay, it seems, well, for now anyway, and makes it it makes it hard to sit, and we've talked about it before, Joa, but I sometimes want to fully sit more and be with it totally, or I just can't make it and not sit. So it's tricky, and but it's not something that's comfortable to sit with. It's sometimes painful. So it's sort of it's puts. I mean, it doesn't. It's how do I say? Doesn't it sort of questions my practice? I mean, the let's say the sitting practice, not the practice as a whole, and with the fact that I'm that it's in everything, but it's just this actual sitting. So anyway, so that's what I wanted to share.
Yeah, that's really your condition, and that, yeah, what you need to be creative with and see what's the most appropriate. As you said, sometimes it's maybe it might be appropriate to sit with it and maybe or and focus on it, and maybe not sometimes. Both practices are valid. Yeah, I'm thinking they are valid if we have a a clear sense of where we're going with all that. What are we trying to cultivate? If that is unclear, then it's well, the practices are going to be messy as it is unclear. And each of us have, we have, we each have our own conditions, circumstances, and that we work with, that we need to work with. And they're not necessarily nice conditions, and we have probably have all kinds of judgments with our conditions. But that's where they are. Yeah, Freddy.
The Buddha described the fact of meditating, like having a big pocket of things, of little things, watching it. This is a rain. This is a bee. This is a stone. And it's like an inventory, knowledge of things. You don't judge, you just watch what is in the pocket and put it. This is my breath. This is my pain. This is my judgment of things. We just hold it without judging. He said that is the process of meditation. Just It has many names, but it's one of his metaphor.
Yeah, and it's one of the things I've done with the students at this school is to encourage them to name it, and also just like we do sessions where I actually focus on more on sensations or on thoughts, and being able to distinguish between sensations and thoughts. It's not the same, and a physical fact, whether or not it's pleasant or unpleasant, that's called the Vedana in the Theravada tradition. So to distinguish the judgments I have, so kind of the logical thought process would be, there is something in my feet there's a pain. All right, the pain is unpleasant, and then I wish I had no pain. If we're able to distinguish these different items, as Freddie says, you know, it's like you pick it up, but you actually, it really, I find it's very helpful actually to name it. And then you recognize what it is, and that also allows to help developing a sense of non-reactivity, because, well, it's just an opinion that I have about it. It's just a sensation. All right, it stings. All right, it stings. Right, I can recognize that. I recognize that I don't like when it stings. It's two different things. And by naming it, that really trains the mind to have more clarity about the different layers, stratas of our experience. And I found that extremely, extremely useful. And, or, you know, if a person is screaming at you, you might feel the discomfort of the sound itself. But then there's the content also of what is being said. And then you go with the whole narrative about why is he saying that to me, da 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 da, and then we get caught up, right? Different things, different elements. So as Freddie said, you know, just bring it out, but and name it, like sensations, thoughts, ideas, opinions, judgments. That helps. That really helps. And that's the practice that can be done. Another type of practice that can be done, and we can sequence that by just dedicating one practice to the bodily sensations. That's the mindfulness of the body, and then the mindfulness of sensations, the mindfulness of thoughts. And then the fourth aspect, I'm laying out what is being said in the Anapanasati Sutra. And then the fourth one are the Dhammas, like impermanence. When we say, oh, we're dwelling in impermanence, like we can contemplate, we can do a meditation that allows us, that brings our attention to the fact that things are changing. So, and that's also can be a focus of a meditation, right? Just know, and we can, there are many ways to practice that type of meditation. So I find it really nice, to unpack all these items instead of thinking, well, everything is one, there's nothing to say. Last word of Zen, drinking my cup. Well, we can, it's all true, but we can also unpack it a little bit. All right, it's time. Thank you so much for sharing and listening. And we'll finish with a four vows.